They were sitting in the back of the custom Jaguar stretch limousine that Teabing kept at the airport. Remy drove. Teabing grinned and turned to Sophie.
Ms. Neveu, give the Harvard boy one more shot at the verse, will you?
Sophie fished in her pocket and pulled out the black cryptex, which was wrapped in the vellum. They had decided to leave the rosewood box and larger cryptex behind in the plane's strongbox, carrying with them only what they needed, the far more portable black cryptex. Sophie unwrapped the vellum and read,
In London lies a knight, a pope interred. His labor's fruit a holy wrath incurred. You seek an orb that ought be on his tomb. It speaks of rosy flesh and seeded womb.
Langdon shrugged. A knight buried by a pope? A knight whose funeral was presided over by a pope? Teabing laughed loudly. Oh, that's rich. Always the optimist, Robert. Look at the second line. This knight obviously did something that incurred the holy wrath of the church. Think again.
A knight a pope killed? Sophie asked.
Teabing smiled. Well done, my dear. A knight a pope buried or killed? Langdon thought of the notorious Templar roundup in 1307, unlucky Friday the 13th, when Pope Clement killed hundreds of knights Templar. But there must be endless graves of knights killed by popes.
Ah, not so. Teabing said. Many of them were burned at the stake, but this poem refers to a tomb in London.
He paused.
Robert, for heaven's sake, the church built in London by the Priory's military arm, the Knights Templar themselves.
The Temple Church? Langdon drew a startled breath.
It has a crypt? 10 of the most frightening tombs you will ever see.
Sophie eyed Teabing.
But what about the rest of the poem?
I'm not sure. It's puzzling. We will need to examine each of the 10 tombs carefully. With luck, one of them will have a conspicuously absent orb.
Langdon's watch read almost 7:30 when they emerged from the Jaguar limousine onto Temple Street and wound through a maze of buildings to a small courtyard outside Temple Church.
It's early on a Saturday, Teabing said, hobbling toward the entrance, so I'm assuming we won't have services to deal with.
Inside the church, an altar boy was almost finished vacuuming the communion kneelers when he heard a knocking on the sanctuary door. The young man switched off his vacuum cleaner and marched toward the door. Teabing introduced himself with full title as a knight of the realm, and the boy let them in to look around. Teabing thanked him, then led Langdon and Sophie deeper into the church as the boy went back to his work. As they approached a foreboding circular section of the church, Sophie said,
It looks like a fortress in there.
The Knights Templar were warriors, Teabing reminded. A religio-military society. Their churches were their strongholds.
As they arrived outside the circular chamber, Teabing raised a crutch, pointing toward the far left of the room, and then to the far right. 10 stone knights, 5 on the left, 5 on the right. Lying prone on the floor, the carved life-sized figures rested in peaceful poses. Depicted wearing full armor, shields, and swords, the tombs gave Langdon the uneasy sensation that someone had snuck in and poured plaster over the knights while they were sleeping. All of the figures were deeply weathered, and yet each was clearly unique. Different armory pieces, distinct leg and arm positions, facial features, and markings on their shields. In London lies a knight a pope interred. Langdon felt shaky as he inched deeper into the circular room. This had to be the place. In a rubbish-strewn alley very close to Temple Church, Remy Legludec pulled the Jaguar limousine to a stop in a deserted area behind a row of industrial waste bins. Killing the engine, he got out of the car, walked toward the rear, and climbed back into the limousine's main cabin with the bound monk. Loosening his bow tie, Remy went to the limousine's wet bar, where he poured himself a vodka. He drank it in a single swallow and followed it with a second.
Soon I will be a man of leisure.
Searching the bar, Remy found a standard service wine opener and flicked open the sharp blade. Remy turned and faced Silas, holding up the glimmering blade. Silas's red eyes flashed fear.
Be still, Remy whispered, raising the blade.
Silas could not believe that God had forsaken him. Even the physical pain of being bound, Silas had turned into a spiritual exercise, asking the throb of his blood-starved muscles to remind him of the pain Christ endured. Now, as the knife descended, Silas clenched his eyes shut.
A slash of pain tore through his shoulder blades.
"Take a drink," the tuxedoed man whispered, his accent French. "It will help with your circulation."
Silas's eyes flew open in surprise. A blurry image was leaning over him, offering a glass of liquid. A mound of shredded duct tape lay on the floor beside the bloodless knife.
"Drink this," he repeated. "The pain you feel is the blood rushing into your muscles."
"I had wanted to free you earlier," the servant apologized.
"But it was impossible. You understand, don't you, Silas?"
Silas recoiled, startled. "You know my name?" The servant smiled. Silas sat up now. "Are you the teacher?" Remy shook his head, laughing at the proposition.
"I wish I had that kind of power. No, I am not the teacher. Like you, I serve him. But the teacher speaks highly of you. My name is Remy."
Silas was amazed. Indeed, the teacher had told Silas about another who served him, and yet their chance meeting like this seemed impossible.
"I don't understand. If you work for the teacher, why did Langdon bring the keystone to your home?"
"Not my home. The home of the world's foremost Grail historian, Sir Lee Teabing."
"But you live there. The odds..."
Remy smiled, obviously having no trouble with the apparent coincidence of Langdon's chosen refuge.
"It was all utterly predictable. Robert Langdon was in possession of the keystone, and he needed help. What more logical place to run than to the home of Lee Teabing? That I happen to live there is why the teacher approached me in the first place."
He paused.
"How do you think the teacher knows so much about the Grail?"
Now it dawned, and Silas was stunned. The teacher had recruited a servant who had access to all of Sir Lee Teabing's research. It was brilliant.
"There is much I have to tell you," Remy said, handing Silas the loaded Glock they had taken from him back at the chateau.
Then he reached through the open partition and retrieved a small, palm-sized revolver from the glove box.
"But first, you and I have a job to do."
Captain Fash descended from his transport plane at Biggin Hill and went immediately to Teabing's hangar. Accompanied by local police, he found Teabing's pilot still on the plane. 3 minutes later, he had a full report, including a description of the bound albino monk. In addition, he learned that the pilot saw Langdon and Sophie leave something behind in Teabing's safe, a wooden box of some sort. Fash strode to the back of the plane and poured himself a hard drink. Sitting in a plush bucket seat, he closed his eyes, trying to sort out what was going on. Everyone was now on the lookout for a black Jaguar limousine. Fash's phone rang.
"Hello?
I'm en route to London." It was Bishop Aringarosa. "I'll be arriving in an hour. Do you have Silas?"
"No, but I will find Silas and the others as soon as possible. Tell your pilot to come to Biggin Hill Executive Airfield in Kent. If I'm not here when you land, I'll have a car waiting for you."